So happy it's Thursday. Welcome, ESPN, 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. In studio with us today, Justin Reckers, Managing Director of Pacific Divorce Management. He is a CDFA. What does that mean?
That is short for Certified Divorce Financial Analyst.
Certified Divorce Financial Analyst.
That's correct.
Awesome. Also in studio, Sean Weber, the Love Doctor, family law attorney with Brave, Weber, and Mack. He's got a great segment on his website about love and real estate. We frequently talk about that and maybe hitting on that a little bit today. He's an advocate of the collaborative divorce. Actually, him and Justin collaborate commonly on the collaborative divorce end of things, and has a really good track record for keeping people out of court. Ahead of us today, in case you haven't guessed, we're going to be talking about divorce, all hour long.
Well, prenups, and there's a lot of specific things that I think people are curious about out there that I think we're going to roll up our sleeves and talk about.
Topics today are the most common argument that leads to divorce and how to prevent it. There's been some new studies that come out that Justin has brought to our attention that we're going to address, as well as, and I'm sure we won't be able to get through all of them, the 20 biggest concerns for people contemplating a separation. Gentlemen, welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
So what is the most common argument that leads to a divorce? I mean, I can make some guesses. based on what happened this morning. Yeah.
Well, give us your guesses. What are your guesses?
Tell us.
What are your guesses? Oh, boy. What are your guesses? Different methods for raising the children.
That's a good one.
That's a common thought. Absolutely.
That's good, but wrong.
That is not the
biggest cause of divorce.
How to manage your money.
Money?
Ding, ding, ding.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, we got some new research recently that effectively says for the very first time that fighting over money in a marriage is the most common reason why divorces happen.
What do they say? Like poverty comes in the door, love goes out the window, or something like that?
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. Yeah, it's a good analogy.
It's even bigger than affairs.
Affairs or—
Really?
Yeah, or as you said, raising children, fights over how to raise children, or some of the other things they looked at were,
People are more likely to get divorced over balancing the checkbook than they are over the husband's side dish.
Well, now that makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
It's always the husband's side dish?
Well, the women aren't innocent in this either.
Got it. Okay.
Well, when I say it makes a lot of sense, what I think about is that over the last 5 years— we've experienced a real downturn in the economy, and there's been a big pent-up of divorce, right? People, in fact, couldn't afford to separate assets and divide households and reestablish themselves in a lot of cases. And so people were putting up with each other during the downtime in a lot of ways, and now that things have kind of recovered, you guys are probably experiencing an influx of filings.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And when we're in economic circumstances that make it even harder for people to divide up assets because either they're worth nothing in the case of an underwater house or they're worth a lot less than they used to be, oftentimes people will just choose to stick it out, live in separate bedrooms. Maybe one of them goes and lives in an apartment, lives at their parents' house, something like that, and they wait until things recover. That's not just in the case of people who have little money either. Even the wealthy set of the world, if they got a circumstance where it'll be harder to divide up assets or they'd be forced to sell something in order to get out of the divorce, they'll wait too.
With my wealthier clients, I've seen more of that because they're more likely, maybe one spouse goes into one house and the other spouse goes into the rental.
Or the wing.
Or whatever.
Avoid each other more.
Yeah, it's true that financial pressure can actually have an effect of slowing down the divorce rate in some kind of perverse way, but I think I don't think it changes the fact that people get divorced. It just may change the way they get the divorce. I mean, we found that during the recession, the filings at the family court were just as high as they ever were. But I think what was happening is they weren't paying professionals to do a lot of the work.
That's a very good point.
Now you have a 3-page paper here that references a couple different studies as to how they came up to this conclusion. What's that all about?
Yeah, well, so over many years, really over the last, say, two or three decades, as divorce did kind of proliferate around the United States, there's been lots of social scientists at universities doing research to try and determine, you know, why does divorce happen? How can we predict it? Look at census data. And, of course, in many of the studies, they'll do questionnaires or surveys of actual real families. So in one of the studies that just recently came out, it was about 4,500 families that were actually surveyed, and they were trying to get to the bottom of whether financial arguments were, in fact, a legitimate reason or one of the main reasons why divorces happened. And there's some professors out of Kansas State and Texas Tech and Utah State, actually, that collaborated on the study. And what they found was that, you know, the disagreements that couples had in marriage about money were more salient or more difficult or more kind of up at the front of their consciousness when they're fighting, which means that they get more angry than when they fight about other things. As money means a lot of other stuff to people. You know, it means safety. It means security. It means any number of things values-wise. So it's not surprising to me, being a financial guy, to see that this study did in fact confirm that divorce is caused by financial arguments more than anything else.
If you're just tuning in, we're on the line here with Justin Redkers. He's the managing director of Pacific Divorce Management. The website, PACDivorce.com. That's the website, PACDivorce.com. He is a CDFA, Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. And we're talking about, I guess it is the number one reason, number one argument that leads to divorce. It ends up being money. And obviously, there's a variety of ways to solve that.
Well, you know, it seems to me that when people are dealing with money every day, they're budgeting, they're buying things, they're sending the kids to private schools or not, and they're making these decisions all along. And so it's something in the relationship that just doesn't go away, you know, whereas, you know, as something as catastrophic as an affair could be, you know, a one and done and, you know, time heals itself. Perhaps they can get through that. But, you know, you're talking about financial issues every single day of their marriage. And with this economy the way it went, you know, someone could have been making $600,000, you know, drop all the way down to, say, $200,000. That's a significant swing. And, you know, people start to point fingers and they don't get used to the new way of living and having to budget. I mean, this could put a lot of pressure on a relationship.
Yeah. If people don't have a clear picture of what their plans are going to be if somebody loses a job, and it happens, then what's the first thing that comes into the marriage? Trying to figure out how to resolve the issue. And not everybody has the skills that are necessary to, you know, navigate and kind of decision make together as a couple. And when they have different, you know, the disparate meanings of money and values around money, turns into clashes. And if it takes somebody longer to get a job because we're in a recession, it makes things even worse.
Or clashes.
Well, and isn't it true, Justin, that it's not just when money is difficult, it's that they have disagreements about how to use their money?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
True.
It could be a huge influx of income.
Yeah, it's just differences. Sometimes it could be just differences of philosophy. One person's more likely to spend and one's more of a saver. It may not be that they have money problems. It's just they disagree over how they're going to allocate the resources that they have. And
sure.
And this gets into the issues that happen in a lot of marriages where you have issues of control and power in the marriage. Who controls the checkbook, you know, has a lot of power in the marriage.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I heard a comedian talking about, you know, when you get married, you just get a check. That's all you get. You get to carry a blank check in your checkbook, and that's it. You know, and he was asking people, what's your number? You know, what's your check number?
Yeah, you know, I have a bachelor's degree in family financial management, and my wife manages our checkbook.
There you go.
Well, you know, one of the things we talked a little bit about off air was a prenup, and how, in fact, a prenup is really sitting down with the person you're about to get married to and discussing the business of, you know, the relationship and where your values are financially. And people actually say that this is an important thing to have. This is an important conversation to have before you actually get married.
So I'm sure we've all heard of what a prenup is, the lack of perhaps romance associated with one of those. And with the understanding that one of the biggest arguments people have is about money, perhaps a prenup is a solution to that, or maybe it's not. Frankly, that's what we're going to discuss on the next segment coming up.
The law is on your side. That's right. The laws are designed to protect consumers from being riddled with debt. They're designed that way so that you can become debt-free and get a fresh start. You should do what I did. When I had financial stress, I called William McDonald with the McDonald Legal Group. Find out how you can use the law to your advantage. Delete your debt and keep your stuff. You got credit card debt, timeshares, old IRS debt, collections, medical bills, any of this stuff can be wiped away with the Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and it only takes 100 days. Call William McDonald today. 800-997-1235. 800-997-1235. Or go online, sandiegobankruptcy.us. 800-997-1235.
This is Lisa with the McDonald Legal Group. We are a debt relief agency. We help people file for bankruptcy relief under the bankruptcy code.
Just having an estate plan or trust in place isn't always enough to make difficult times less challenging for you and your family. Life is full of change. This is why it's so important to have your estate documents reviewed regularly. Contact my attorney, Jared Causa, with Neil Diamant Law Firm, and find out if a review of your estate plan is needed. 619-238-1712. Since life changes so quickly, make sure your estate is properly handled. 619-238-1712 for your free consultation. Just mention Mr. Credit. 619-238-1712.
Hi, Credit Repair Mike here. I'm very happy to be the only credit repair company recommended by Mr. Credit, and I hope the information I've brought to the show has helped you in some way. Right now, our company is growing so rapidly that we are looking to hire more sales agents immediately. So if you know someone who is out of work and wants to make some extra money, we have both full-time and part-time positions available. Our credit repair program is only $4.99 per person. Yes, $4.99 per person, no matter what. And we have a money-back guarantee. The program sells itself. That's why Mr. Credit recommends us. Because you can't get full-service credit repair this cheap from anywhere else. Call me, Credit Repair Mike, at 1-800-525-1349 to find out more. That's 1-800-525-1349. Or go to creditrepairmike.com. Creditrepairmike.com. That's creditrepairmike.com.
Student loan debt in the United States is now larger than credit card debt, coming in at over $1 trillion. The good news is there is a company I know very well that's helping people lower monthly payments on student loans every single day. I have a personal friend that I referred to this company. He had over $20,000 in federal student loan debt and was making payments of more than $150 a month. He was able to get his payment down to $45 a month, and also any balance remaining after the 300 payments may be completely forgiven. Call 877-927-6864 and ask about the free guide, 8 Secrets on How to Lower Student Loan Payments. It's 100% free. 877-927-6864. Student loan relief is real, and I want you to have it today. 877-927-6864 is the number. That's 877-927-6864.
Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM, Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. We've been talking about the most common argument that leads to divorce, and we're on with Justin Reckers, Managing Director of Pacific Divorce Management, and Sean Weber, Family Law Attorney of Brave, Weber, and Mack, discussing money. Apparently, it's what leads, this is the argument, the topic that people argue about the most. That leads to divorce.
Yeah, evidently it's not for better or worse. It's for better or worse, and maybe if it gets worse, we might just end things. I don't know. But when we're talking about getting together and discussing some of the logistics behind a marriage, you know, prenup comes to mind.
Yeah, you know, prenups are a really good vehicle to use in the pre-marriage planning. And all too often, and you know, Justin and I were talking about this during the break, people don't talk about their money before they get married. They're talking about picking out china and filling out their gift registries and all that fun stuff. But you know, talking about the money and what they expect from one another is a conversation they really should be having, and the prenup could be a great vehicle for that.
It seems like a very sensitive subject to really get into when you're engaged, you're in love, and people have said love is blind, and you're sitting here thinking, well, should we talk about a prenup when I love you, you love me, everything is mine is yours, everything is yours is mine kind of attitude. Does it kill some of the romance in the situation here? Or?
Well, I mean, maybe in the short run it's a little uncomfortable, but if you want to have a long-term marriage that actually stays romantic,
I think everybody here would say yes.
You want to get on the same page about your money. And you may think, you may go into this relationship thinking what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. You know, you may go into that kind of, or some people
unless
go into a relationship.
$75,000 in credit card debt, right?
Right. Or some people think what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine. You know, and so you have to go into that relationship eyes wide open about what you're going to do with your money and what the finances are. And one of the things that's important and required before a prenup could be enforceable is that you do a full financial disclosure. So you have to have a balance sheet essentially attached to the prenuptial agreement that says this is everything I own and this is everything I owe. So if you're getting married to somebody and that person has $40,000 of credit card debt, you know about it before you get into the marriage.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Sean Weber, family law attorney with Brave Weber & Mack. His website, bravewebermack.com. That's the website, bravewebermack.com. So with the understanding that arguments about money are the most common reason or most common thing that lead to divorce, is a prenup a solution to this? Is it going to work?
Sure. Doesn't it sound romantic to try and head disputes off before they even happen? I think it does. You have the conversations that are required to negotiate a prenuptial agreement before you get married. It removes a lot of potential arguments in your marriage.
So does your opinion, everybody that's getting married should have a prenup or at least have these conversations and put them in writing about money?
Well, here's the dirty little secret. Everybody already has a prenup. It's just been written in Sacramento by the legislature.
Which means that everything is common property.
Yes, it's called the family code.
It's called law.
Yeah, it's called the family code. And so you have community property, you have spouse support obligations and all of that. You can, with a prenup, alter that marital contract that was written for you in Sacramento that you probably don't even know about.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
I see.
And, you know, I think you mentioned also that some of the prenups that are out there have actually been pierced. So in some cases be improperly written.
Well, we can thank Barry Bonds for that. You know, this is ESPN Radio, right? We can thank Barry Bonds. There's a case, Marriage of Bonds, where Mr. Bonds had a marriage to a non-native English speaker. And there was some question as to whether she understood what she was signing. It was a very onerous prenuptial agreement. And the court upheld that prenuptial agreement. And so since then, we have what's called the Uniform Premarital Agreement Act, which is a significant piece of the family code, which makes it very difficult for us to draft enforceable prenuptial agreements. But if you dot all your I's and you cross all of your T's, you've got it.
So when you say they upheld it, meaning it stood unpierced, or it was pierced because she was able to say, hey, I didn't understand what I was signing?
They upheld the agreement, even though there was evidence that she may not have understood what she was signing or may have been under duress and that sort of thing. And so it made people upset, because it was very onerous and it was very one-sided in favor of Mr. Bonds. And so
it upheld the agreement but made it a lot harder for everybody else to do the same thing.
So the underwriting guidelines, so to speak.
Change the way people
The legislation was the reaction to the Bonds case.
Right.
You know, whenever you have some injustice in the courts, then the legislature steps in and changes the law.
There's a problem here. We need to rewrite this.
And so what they say is, we don't like this. We think premarital agreements should be harder to uphold. And we want to make sure that everybody knows what they're signing. So one of the rules that they have is it's virtually impossible, though theoretically it is, but it's very difficult to draft a prenuptial agreement that'll be enforceable unless you have attorneys on both sides.
What happens if the prenuptial agreement that you have is the old style? Is it still going to be upheld? Is there just a grandfather clause in this thing? I mean, we're into this marriage for long term. Is this something that I would imagine would need to be redone?
Well, so my understanding, and I'm not the lawyer in the room, but my understanding experience is that when you have to be clear about the old form, if it's the old form that was done before Bonds, the case happened, then yeah, it can still be upheld. If it's the old form that some old attorney happened to have in a template in his office that he used after the Bonds decision, then I'd say no, it wouldn't be.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I'd want to double check that to make sure I'm not lying to you, but I think that's correct. Most of the prenuptial agreements I'm seeing now were drafted post-bond, so it doesn't come up very often in my practice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I saw a pre-bonds or pre-uniform marital agreement act, pre-uniform, I can't talk.
Premarital agreement.
A pre-marital agreement uniform, oh, whatever. If I see one of those, I'm going to have to check on that and make sure that the retroactivity isn't there.
Yeah, well, I've seen a couple of them recently, and what has happened is effectively they've been restated as what you call a postnuptial agreement. So they restate their prenuptial agreement into a postnuptial, meaning after they've been married, to reiterate their original plans in a more current format.
That's true. You can do a lot with a postnuptial agreement, although there are some limits.
And so what should I be looking for to have in my pre or post-nup? Well, I mean, I understand it's important to have one, but what does it say?
And things like that?
Well, I mean, number one, what you don't want to have is things that are against public policy. So you don't want to have something in there that encourages divorce.
Oh.
Okay. That could be considered unenforceable. The other thing is you want to make sure that the agreement's not what's called unconscionable when written. And one way to do that is make sure that there are two attorneys on both, you know, one attorney on each side, so that there's no duress. The other thing is you got to make sure there's full disclosure, that everything's in there that needs to be in there as far as disclosing to the other party about the finances. And then you need to have a waiver of further disclosure, so which means that you don't have to continually update that disclosure after the marriage.
That makes sense. So a prenuptial agreement, when you disclose all your assets, you can't just say, here it is, and, oh, by the way, just don't look at that offshore account that I have, but sign this that says everything is
correct.
Mine is mine.
And there's another rule. You can't just show up on the day of the wedding and say, oh, sign this for that to be enforceable. And so you have to have – there has to be 7 days that the final draft is in your hands, in both parties' hands, before it is signed. So they need to have 7 days to be able to think about it. Otherwise, it'll be thrown out.
Really? And how do they – there's something you sign when you receive it and something you sign when you agree to it?
Is I mean, most attorneys, they'll have a letter that says, okay, this was sent to you. I usually put a clause in the agreement.
Not you've been served.
Right. Well, it's almost that bad. But I usually put a clause in the agreement that just says we've had this for more than 7 days and have it initialed.
I've even seen circumstances where there was an attorney's bill attached to the back of it that showed each time the attorney was billing for meetings with the client so that they could show exactly what the dates were that they met in preparation for it.
I see. And you're talking a little bit about – you're kind of alluding to the fact that sometimes these things are done incorrectly, perhaps because people are doing it without appropriate counsel. Does that happen? Do people do this without attorneys on both sides?
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've had somebody come into my office and they've had a – I won't name any names of online legal services.
Like, yeah, I know what you're talking about, like legal
–
Something.
Right. Some of those come to me and they're really not enforceable. And
really?
And if you're preparing it yourself and you haven't had an attorney involved on both sides, it's very difficult to avoid the unconscionability issue.
So what do people put in it, right? I mean, prenup just seems to – I seem to think, okay, you know, what is mine is mine. What's yours is yours. If I – earn a bunch of money during the marriage, we're going to split it out 50-50. What do they write in these things?
When you talk about income, this is usually on the front end of a prenuptial agreement. Typically, the standard provision is that each person's income during the course of the marriage will remain their separate property, which is the part of it that's counter to the state of California's law.
Right, because when you come to the marriage, what you earned and kept before the marriage is still yours after the marriage. But when you marry, everything becomes community property.
That's right. The income becomes community property.
A lot of times what I see people do is they want to craft in the premarital agreement provisions that make it so that if you create community property, it's on purpose.
What do you mean by that?
And a lot of times, you know, there's things that can happen where you come in with separate property, but you do things that transmute that separate property into community property, and you want to avoid that transmutation. And so you can actually draft into the premarital agreement provisions that protect you from unwittingly transmuting your separate property so that it's on purpose when you create community property.
What would be an example of unwittingly transmutating my community property?
I'll give you a good example from the world of real estate where somebody goes to refinance a home that they owned prior to marriage. And in order to refinance that home, they have to use both husband and wife's credit to qualify for it. In the process of refinancing it, they put the other person's name on the title of the piece of property and their name on the mortgage. and that could potentially be an unwitting transfer or transmutation.
Yeah, or there's a thing called the Moore-Marsden interest. It's based on a couple of cases, marriage of Moore, marriage of Marsden. And that is, you have a house, it's the family residence, but it was your separate property, you brought it to the marriage, and you're using your wages to pay the principal down on the mortgage. Now you're creating
community wages.
Right, now you're creating a community property interest. And then sometimes people want to have deals where they protect their retirement, they want their retirement to remain separate property, they want their wages to be separate property. And it, again, having the conversation about the premarital agreement forces them to have the conversation. What do my wages really mean?
If you're just tuning in, we're on the line here with Sean Weber, the Love Doctor, Brave Weber and Mac. His website, bravewebermac.com. That's the website, bravewebermac.com. Talking about, well, how potentially you can avoid the most common argument that leads to a divorce by getting a prenup and getting it done right the first time. And I guess there's not really a second time if there's not a divorce. So getting it done right the first time. When we come back, we're going to talk about the 20 biggest concerns for people contemplating a separation.
Yo, what's up? Right Brand Bacon here. I'm the bigger, better bacon. Bacon that makes a bold statement. We're talking major slices of thick, meaty bacon. I'm so big you could serve me to the presidents on Mount Rushmore. When I'm on the grill sizzling, I smell so incredible, it attracts guys faster than a half-price bikini car wash. I'm so tender.
Right
so
Brand delicious. Bacon. Bigger, better bacon. Find out more at biggerbetterbacon.com.
Hi, Tom Bodad, sharpening my memory with word association. I read a word, then say the first thing that pops into my noggin. Like dark, that's easy. Light, dog, fuzzy. Handsome, thanks. And Motel 6? Value. That's because we always save you money on a clean, comfortable room. And lowest price of any national chain is more than one word. I'm a stickler. Book online at motel6.com. I'm Tom Bodette, and we'll leave the light on for you.
This is John Feinstein, and this is a CBS Sports Minute. It's generally conceded among those who love opera that the greatest achievement in that musical genre was Wagner's Ring Cycle, four operas written about the tragic interactions between gods and humans. At the end of the fourth opera, Goethe Demeron, all the gods perish, done in by their insatiable need to be worshipped at all times. Which brings us to Alex Rodriguez. Rodriguez was once a godlike figure in baseball, the game's wealthiest player, and some argued gifted with supernatural talents. Enter Wagner. Rodriguez is falling so fast now, it's likely this opera won't take anywhere close to the 6 hours Goethe Demeron takes. Last fall, A-Rod couldn't hit. Now he can't play. Soon, Major League Baseball may banish him. No one falls more dramatically than the gods. I'm John Feinstein.
If it's time to top off, flush or refill your cooling system, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for O'Reilly Universal Premix Coolant on sale for $7.99 a gallon. Protect your engine with O'Reilly Universal Premix Coolant, $7.99 a gallon at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Limits apply. See store for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The joint supplements of today are sadly incomplete because they don't give you the joint relief you need. Until now. Introducing the complimentary 2-week sample of Instaflex, our most powerful joint formula ever. It's the number one selling joint supplement at GNC. Claim your sample today. 1-800-514-1927. Great for your knees, hands, even your hips. Instaflex is available at GNC, but you can only get your complimentary 2-week sample by calling 1-800-514-1927. 1-800-514-1927.
Guys, you've heard about Ageless Male, the natural supplement that helps boost free testosterone levels. But now, the best testosterone product is even better because for a limited time, you can try Ageless Male free. That's right. Call now and you can boost your free testosterone levels with Ageless Male for free. You only pay shipping and handling. Just call 1-800-243-0933. Ageless Male can help you feel more like you used to in your active life and in your romantic life. Because our formula has been clinically shown to increase your drive, desire, and performance. If you're ready to recapture that drive from your youth, now is the time to try Ageless Male with this free bottle giveaway. You must call now because this free offer is for a limited time only. Just call 1-800-243-0933. 1-800-243-0933. 1-800-243-0933.
Hi, it's Colin Cowherd. You're listening to ESPN Radio 1700. Catch me weekdays at 7 a.m. ESPN Radio 1700.
Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM, Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. Well, I'm told we weren't done talking about prenups. I guess there's more to go.
Oh, why would you ever want to talk about anything else?
Well, I think we're going to find out.
We just raise a lot of questions. That's all it is. You know, I mean, I have a story. I have a friend that was engaged after a seven-year relationship, and that her fiancé received a lot of money from an inheritance. And that then caused him to say to her during their engagement period, we need a prenup, right? Which, knowledge is power. If he would have reached out and touched base with you guys, he would have seen that an inheritance was personal property prior to the marriage anyway. Even if you are married, it's my understanding that if you receive an inheritance, it's not part of the spouses. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, separate. You know, a lot of what we litigate is what is it, is this a community property asset or is this a separate property asset? And I've talked about the goalposts on the show before: date of marriage, date of separation. And if you get it between the date of marriage and the date of separation, it's community property, unless it's by gift, bequest, inheritance, or devise. And so, if you inherit a house from Uncle Charlie or whoever, that is your separate property, unless you do one of those unwitting things that we talked about.
Yeah, Uncle Charlie's always a generous guy.
I like him. Aunt Mabel, too.
Well, you know, I mean, so someone receives inheritance from a family member and they're married. This inheritance is not community property.
That's correct.
So if there's anybody out there that's waiting for an inheritance to split before the divorce, here now, that's not the case, that inheritance is either your property or your spouse's property, not community property.
I mean, talk to your lawyer.
Absolutely.
Right, I'm just
we're not providing
hearing,
legal
right.
advice on the air.
Right.
For purposes only.
This is for entertainment purposes only. But, yeah, I mean, you can't rely on anything we say, you know, just leave it at that. But talk to an attorney. But, yes, you're correct. The law is that if you inherit something that is separate property, and what can happen is people can, by mistake or by doing things during the marriage or even on purpose, they can turn things that are separate property into community property.
And you mentioned that with the refinance situation. I got to imagine this happens all the time. Incomes go up, incomes go down for one reason or another. One person owns the home. They refi. Maybe they take more money out of it. Then all of a sudden, two people become on the loan and perhaps two people on the deed to the property. And perhaps slightly after you refi, you would quick claim and take one person off, so you're back to the original owner on the property, but still two people are stuck with that loan. What'd you call that, unintended transmutation?
Yeah, that's a good terminology for it. It could have been, at least, an unintended transmutation. Obviously, there was an intent for them to qualify for a mortgage that was part of that process. And so one of the things that's common to look at is what was the lender's intent of lending the money. So sometimes people will just get put on a deed temporarily for purposes of closing escrow when they know
sure.
that they're a married couple and they want to make sure the title is clear.
Well, the underwriting right? guidelines have gotten harder, right? So people have to have a higher debt-to-income ratio or a lower debt-to-income ratio. They have to have, you know, substantial assets to back it up. I mean, the guidelines have gotten tougher while interest rates have gotten lower. So, you know, someone could have a property in their name. They're married for 5 years. They want to refinance this down into a lower interest rate. Meanwhile, they've acquired a few other pieces of real estate. Now, when the underwriter looks at that and says, well, geez, you know, you don't qualify on your own income, even though this person's married but thinking this is sole and separate property, they enroll the spouse into signing the loan documents and putting them on the title, now we've, in a sense, unintentionally perhaps added them to part ownership of this.
Yeah, I've even seen situations where a quitclaim deed was signed by two individuals, a married couple, as single individuals to the person who's separate property it was, even though the second person was never on the title in the first place, just to effectively clear the title to make sure that there was no title transfer that didn't go through the correct steps.
I've also seen situations where it was clearly a community property residence. It was initially deeded in both their names, husband and wife, but because husband had really horrible credit, they quit claim the house to the wife so that she could take the loan out on her own. And then the question then is now have we taken community property and turned it into separate property? And there's a lot of question about that, a lot of case law. You have to do it on purpose, the transmutation, for some of those things, because there is a presumption of undue influence with deeds if they appear to overtly benefit one party over the other. So there's all kinds of balancing questions and interests here.
All kinds of them.
And there's a lot of case law, and a lot of it disagrees with each other. You know, the courts don't always agree. And so that's why you pay lawyers a whole bunch of money to litigate it, or have the prenup ahead of time so that when these questions come up, there's not the argument.
Which is why everybody on the radio needs to go and get a legal opinion before they make any assumptions about what is good and what isn't.
Well, you said everybody actually has a prenup. It's just not a prenup that an attorney's written. It's the one that already exists. There's already a prenup recorded. It's the law.
Correct. Yes. It's like I always tell people, you already have a will. It's called the probate code if you haven't written one. You know, yeah. Or you know, it's the same thing with the family code. The family code has written your prenup for you.
And think about how romantic it is for you to go into an attorney's office with your spouse, or your soon-to-be spouse, I should say, and say, no thank you, California. We want to make up our own rules and write a prenuptial agreement.
Yeah, we want to take control ourselves.
It will govern our relationship because we love each other so much that we want to make sure we're taken care of in the way that the other person would have liked.
So that sounds much better.
One thing that Justin and I will do is we'll actually use a collaborative law process where you have two attorneys that sign an agreement that says they're going to work together, and maybe we'll bring in someone like Justin to kind of help make sure the parties understand their finances, and then we'll work together in a very non-adversarial, very friendly way with the attorney to come up with this prenuptial agreement, which basically becomes kind of a contract for the marriage going forward.
Well, I would imagine when you get in front of it, you can have a higher probability of having a very cordial conversation up front, as opposed to, I would suspect, a lower probability of that conversation being cordial towards the dissolving of the marriage.
Or a day before the wedding.
A day before the wedding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. I always tell people, if you're going to come to my office for a prenuptial agreement, please give me time to do it. You know, don't do it at last minute. Have this conversation well in advance. Make this part of your engagement process, because that's really what the engagement process is for. It's to find out whether you really want to marry this person.
So the prenup is defining what is community property and what is separate property. Is that a very general way?
Well, that's a big piece of it. The other thing that you can do with a prenuptial agreement is limit spousal support or alimony. You can have an alimony limitation, or you can predefine what the alimony is going to be if there's a divorce, and you can have different circumstances that give rise to different levels of alimony.
Is this a bilateral alimony? I mean, suppose that the wife is working, she's making good money, he's working, he's making good money, and all of a sudden they get a divorce, but he lost his job, and they're in a long-term relationship, greater than, 12 years marriage, and it's bilateral?
Maybe they got divorced because he lost his job or she lost his job, whichever one, and they didn't know what to do or how to talk about it, or because they didn't have the conversations necessary to do the prenup in the first place.
So if there wasn't a prenup, the state would come in and say, okay, what is her income? What has their lifestyle been like over the last 3-4 years? He is equal to sustaining that lifestyle, and now all of a sudden she's on the hook for paying spousal support until how long? Forever?
Well, so to answer your first question, yeah, it goes both ways. So it doesn't matter who the person is. Usually the agreement – usually. I shouldn't say always, but usually the agreement is drafted to work the same for both people, no matter who the wage earner or separatizer of property is. That's been my experience.
I've also had cases. In fact, I did a case last month, or maybe it was 2 months ago, where we did a prenuptial agreement. It was the husband's second marriage. He was quite wealthy to begin with. And the soon to be wife was not, and he was afraid because he'd had a horrible divorce, you know, coming off of this divorce, that he was going to have the same repeat. They were very much in love, but she agreed to not take a large amount of spouse support should they get divorced. But she did want to make sure she had at least a cushion so that if there was a divorce or something happened, that she would be okay. So they agreed to a set amount of alimony that he would pay her in the event of a divorce. And it had to happen within 10 years. And if it was after 10 years, they agreed to just follow the family code.
Got it. So that, I see. In a sense, that was like a sunset to that prenup.
To that provision of the prenup.
Okay. To that provision, yeah.
So I understand there's a lot of these provisions. For example, if we have a child together, maybe things change within that prenup.
Yeah, some common ones that I've seen drafted and people discussed and agreed to. You might determine a set percentage of an asset that somebody would get. So if somebody had a premarital residence, you'd say that if we were married for a certain period of time, the other spouse would get a certain percentage of the increase. Or you'd say that the other spouse would get a certain percentage of a retirement account. But if we have a child together, that percentage increases. Or if we are married, as the example that Sean just used, for 10 years or more, then you get a larger percentage. So they're very common provisions that are built in, sunset clauses, as you said.
We're on with Justin Rutgers, Managing Director of Pacific Divorce Management. His website, PACDivorce.com. That's the website, PACDivorce.com. And that's a lot of what you do, is figuring out these percentages, figuring out what people are worth, and doing the math behind the split up, so to speak. I mean, that's your expertise, right?
That's correct. In prenuptial circumstances, what I do is, and one of the things that I think is really important is kind of coaching a couple to have those difficult conversations, which is one of my great skills that I try and involve myself in prenups for. And then secondarily, one of the things that Sean said is you got to do disclosures. It's really, really important to have a good quality balance sheet that sits behind your prenuptial agreement, because if you miss something, then you've not disclosed it. You run the risk of damaging your whole intent in the first place. And it's also important to make sure that both sides have access to equal information, so that they make good decisions.
Well, this isn't really anything new. I mean, the Catholic Church has been doing this sort of thing for, what, thousands of years? They've been getting couples together and basically saying, you need to talk about how things are going to be financially between the two of you before you actually consummate this marriage.
That's
because
right.
This is forever.
That's right.
Well, you briefly said, Sean, that a prenup simply wasn't enough, which means there must be something out there necessary in addition to just a prenup?
Well, I mean, what I tell a lot of my clients when they come in is you have to have layers of protection. You know, the prenup is just one layer, and as we've learned, the legislature may change the rules. And so you want to make sure, okay, I got this prenup, and this is something that could be upheld or not. I've done a lot of litigation on both sides of the issue to uphold or throw out a prenup, and have prevailed and lost on both sides. And so what you might want to do is maybe consider have a separate property trust, or maybe consider, you know, okay, yeah, I want to protect this separate property residence, you know, that we were talking about before. And so I want to make sure that I don't do things that are going to have that transmuted anyway. And so be careful with your finances and make sure you keep your separate property separate in addition to having the prenuptial agreement. And that way, if one fails, you've got some other little safety nets to catch you.
It certainly does make sense. So having a prenup is simply not enough. A couple other layers that you need to have in place. And we're going to get a little bit deeper into what those layers are when we come back.
Hi, Mr. Credit here. I can't tell you how excited I am to have Bruce McPherson with Security One Lending as a regular guest on the show and my go-to guy for reverse mortgages. Listen, if you're 62 years or older and you own a home, whether you have a mortgage or not, chances are you can benefit from one of today's HECM reverse mortgage options. Just call Bruce McPherson at 866-223-7174. That's 866-223-7174. You can just email reversemortgagebruce@gmail.com. Over the past 9 years, Bruce has really earned his reputation as an honest, ethical reverse mortgage advisor, and he's someone I genuinely trust, and you can too. Don't let old myths about reverse mortgages keep you from calling to get the facts. Today's government-insured HECM reverse mortgages are incredibly flexible, whether you need money now or just want to be prepared for the future. Call your local expert, Bruce McPherson, today and get all the answers you need for free. 866-223-7174. That's 866-223-7174, or just email reversemortgagebruce@gmail.com. Have you been selected for an audit by the IRS? Do you owe the IRS money and want to find a way to settle your account as quickly and easily as possible? Hi, Mr. Credit here. Listen, I had the IRS come knocking on my door over $600, which I didn't even owe them as it turns out. I know how scary this stuff can be. The good news is I know exactly what to do. My tax attorney, Jeffrey Kahn, is board certified and works only on tax-related issues. He understands how the IRS works and how to make the most of each situation. And get this, mention Mr. Credit when you call and get a free consultation and a tax resolution plan, $500 value, absolutely free. Call Jeffrey Kahn today at 866-494-6829. That's 866-494-6829 today and get these tax issues behind you as quickly as possible. 866-494-6829. That's 866-494-6829.
Hey, Greeny.
Yes, Kelly.
Do you know how long an average ball game lasts?
Tell me.
That's about 3 hours. And did you know at La Quinta, you can instant hold a room there for up to 4 hours, and it's only going to take you about 20 seconds to do.
Well, great teams know how to hold on to leads. Great business travelers know how to hold on to hotel rooms. Just use the instant hold mobile feature only from La Quinta Inns and Suites. Hold a room instantly with only your phone number.
No credit card?
Nope. That's how La Quinta takes care of you, so you can take care of business. Instant hold your next stay on your smartphone at LQ.com.
Welcome back, folks. The batter steps into the box. The pitch. Long and a long foul ball.
It's headed straight for a fan.
It's moving fast, and he's not paying attention.
As a matter of fact, he's applying Brute cologne.
I sure do love that scent, but that's odd.
And he caught it.
Behind the back.
Between the legs.
With his teeth.
While updating his fantasy team.
And he didn't even spill his beer.
Where are you going, John?
To get that guy's autograph.
Let your man out. Brute, the essence of man. Visit us at facebook.com/Brute.
Para resultados y más información acerca de este programa, consultar la página espnradio1700.com.
ESPN 1700 AM, Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. You just tuning in? You missed a lot. We're talking to Justin Ruckers, Managing Director of Pacific Divorce Management, as well as Sean Weber, family law attorney, Brave Weber and Mac. We were talking about a prenup and how simply having a prenup may not be enough, and there's a couple layers needed. You mentioned a community property trust. What does that mean?
Actually, the word was separate property.
Thank you.
Separate property trust, and that is if you have a bunch of separate property that you want to protect, have a trust and estates attorney put that into a trust. And that could be a layer of protection, at least to help segregate it from the community property. Another thing is just be careful with your separate property. For instance, if you have a rental that's a separate property rental, try to use the rental proceeds to pay the mortgage instead of your community wages.
And keep good records. So my end of this is that I'm the guy who gets hired to do forensic accounting to trace where all the money that existed at the beginning of the marriage went up until the time when the divorce has started. So if you got a 25-year marriage and you had some separate property retirement accounts when you got married, you got to prove that they still exist in order to get them back, because otherwise you can't confirm them to the person. So my job is to look at what existed at the beginning and see if it's still there at the end. 25 years worth of documents is a lot to keep and often gets lost.
That's true. I've seen a lot of separate property claims lost because people didn't keep their documents. And you think, you know, well, I'm only keeping these documents for tax purposes, or after 10 years or something like that, I'm going to throw it out. But maybe you don't want to do that. Maybe hang on to it, especially if it's a separate property interest that you're wanting to protect. You need to be able to trace it, because if the court can't trace it with something that Justin would prepare for them, a report that is easily readable and we can trace it, they're going to say it's commingled and it's gone. Mm. It's community property.
Interesting.
Now.
Yeah, it's like trying to predict you're going to get a divorce. You know, I mean, you may not. You know, it may go on as planned, but if it doesn't, you know, and there are things within the prenup. Well, things you can't actually put in a prenup, right? You can't put child support in a prenup.
Correct. You can't put child support in there. You also can't put things about fault, like whose fault it is if there's a divorce. That's considered against public policy because we're in California. We're a no-fault divorce state.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't put in there, well, if so-and-so has an affair, then he has to pay me a bunch of money.
Well, you just said something that I thought was really interesting, and I want to go back and touch on. You just said if Justin can't trace it down to be different between community property and separate property state, it defaults to community.
Yeah, because you, the person that's trying to prove that it's separate property has the burden of proof. And so you have to be able to show it.
That's a lot of pressure, Justin.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of work, too. Tracing is one of the most expensive things you can ever do.
Forensic accounting sounds
yeah.
like a lot of work.
Tracing is one of the most expensive things you can do, though, because, you know, especially when you get into circumstances where you have accounts at a place like a Vanguard where you get 15 different accounts because you have a different account for every mutual fund that you own there, and you got to trace through all those, and you know, you end up with 75 pages every month that you got to look at.
Wow.
So that stuff takes a lot of time and, by extension, costs a lot of money. And sometimes you can do 20 years of it if you're looking at a 25-year period, and the whole tracing fails at 20 years, and then you got to figure out where you go from there.
Yeah, wouldn't you say most of the tracing failures happen in like stock accounts and mutual fund accounts and things like that where they just didn't keep the statements?
Yeah, exactly. And think about the financial crisis that we just went through. I mean, Lehman Brothers is gone. I've actually had a case before where they had accounts at Lehman Brothers, and there's literally absolutely no place on earth that you can get a statement from Lehman Brothers for about 2 months that I've been able to find because it was during the time when they were failing and they were being taken over by other entities. So
I didn't think of that. Yeah, you'd think they'd be online, but not necessarily the case, huh?
Right.
They just don't exist.
Right.
Yeah, you try to get a subpoena out to Washington Mutual.
Well, let's just say that in that example, 25 years, you're together 25 years and you've done your forensic accounting up to year 20 and you've proven that it is it's not a common interest account up to that 20 years. So you got 5 years of who knows. Is it then completely considered community property at that 24th year or whatever? Or is it that only that 5 year period that's missing, the spouse gets half of that?
Well, that's really an answer that only a judge can probably give you. You know, what would be argued is whether or not after that 20 years when the thing fails, whether that means that the entire tracing has failed or there are other methods of tracing. If you can prove that there was no other way that the money could have come into existence, might be a way that you can still maintain it, for instance. But it's, again, like I said, that's really only a answer that a judge can give you. Mm.
We're on with Justin Rutgers, Managing Director of Pacific Divorce Management. His website, PACDivorce.com. That's the website, PACDivorce.com.
Well, you know, one thing I was thinking about with the prenuptial agreements and why you have it. You know, I'm an attorney. I'm thinking about what can go wrong, what gets us in court, what's a judge going to decide when the divorce happens, right? I'm always seeing things in the tail end. But really, a prenup, what we're talking about, have the prenup to strengthen the marriage, mm-hmm. to help prevent the divorce down the road. That sounds counterintuitive. We're talking about
really.
A document.
I think a lot about a good contract makes a great transaction when it comes to selling real estate.
Yeah, or there's that
Very good analogy.
There's that Robert Frost poem, "Good Fences Make Better Neighbors."
Yeah.
And that's the concept here, is we want to have boundaries, we have understanding about what we're doing.
And it removes the dispute that would otherwise happen at the end, because the prenuptial dictates what should happen when in the event of a divorce. That makes there very little to fight over.
In that earlier example with a friend that had been dating for 7 years, engaged for a few, and he was inheriting that money, and then he said, well, I want a prenup. And she said, well, prenup is fine, but I want a clause in there that if you have an affair, that the prenup is no longer valid. Would that be considered unconscionable, being that we're in a no-fault state?
I think, and again, this is your particular situation. You want to talk to an attorney and make sure the attorney researches this appropriately and advises you appropriately. But I think that would be a violation of public policy and would probably be thrown out.
So
I've litigated that before.
In that case, about having a prenup was based on just myth, urban legend, right? Maybe they thought that the inheritance was going to be community property. And they thought that you could actually have a clause in there that meant that the prenup would be thrown out if you had an affair.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are all really indications that people out there do not know enough about prenups.
Well, one final quick question about prenups. Are prenups just for the super wealthy? I mean, what financial status should you have before you look into something like this?
You should have the financial status of being alive.
Wow.
Really, anybody can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it? Because you can talk about income as well as assets, you don't have to have assets to make it necessary to have the conversations of a prenup and in order to negotiate one. You can have it when you're doing your residency as a doctor before you make any money. In fact, you probably have a negative net worth at that point. You can do them anytime, no matter how much money you have. You don't have to be Rupert Murdoch or anybody like that who's worth billions of dollars. It's intelligent for everybody to have the conversations and potentially consider one.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. That was Justin Ruckers, Pacific Divorce Management. His website, PACDivorce.com. Again, the website, PACDivorce.com. Also with us today, Sean Weber, family law attorney with Brave Weber and Mack. The website, BraveWeberMack.com. That's the website, BraveWeberMack.com. Coming up next, it's Tim Stromble with Sportsport. Stay tuned.
Student loan debt in the United States is now larger than credit card debt, coming in at over $1 trillion. The good news is there is a company I know very well that's helping people lower monthly payments on student loans every single day. I have a personal friend that I referred to this company. He had over $20,000 in federal student loan debt and was making payments of more than $150 a month. He was able to get his payment down to $45 a month, and also any balance remaining after the 300 payments may be completely forgiven. Call 877-927-6864 and ask about the free guide, 8 Secrets on How to Lower Student Loan Payments. It's 100% free, 877-927-6864. Student loan relief is real, and I want you to have it today. 877-927-6864 is the number. That's 877-927-6864. If you are considering a short sale or letting your home go to foreclosure, please listen carefully. There are laws in place to protect you and ways that you can get out of a bad real estate situation completely unharmed in almost every single case. But here's the important thing. Time is of the essence. I will help you 100% free on how to handle a short sale or foreclosure on your home while eliminating the damage done to your wallet. But I need you to call as soon as possible so we have all potential options available to you. Okay, this is the key. Call 888-888-0154. It's 888-888-0154, and just leave a message with your contact info and brief synopsis of the situation. That's it. Won't cost you a dime, but could save.